Welcome to American Dissident Voices. I'm Kevin Alfred Strom. On today's program, we continue our discussion with Mark Weber, director of the Institute for Historical Review. We'll be talking about the lies and deceit of the Jewish Simon Wiesenthal Center, Jewish efforts to censor the Internet, the dangers of the Jewish war agenda in the Middle East, and the so-called Greater Middle East Initiative to overthrow governments which oppose Jewish supremacism. That's all next on American Dissident Voices. American Dissident Voices. Jewish author Norman Finkelstein has stated that nobody plays the well, he didn't use these words. These are my words, but essentially he stated that nobody plays the Holocaust violins louder than the Simon Wiesenthal Center, and he's not entirely happy about that. Is that right?
Well, Norman Finkelstein's a remarkable man. His parents, he says, are both Holocaust survivors. He's written a very blunt book entitled The Holocaust Industry, and he calls the Wiesenthal Center, quote, a gang of heartless and immoral crooks whose hallmark is that they will do anything for a dollar. That's pretty strong words, but it's not inaccurate. The Wiesenthal Center has been denounced even by other Jews for its the relentless way that it plays up the Holocaust in order to gain money. Judith Miller's been in the news a lot lately. She's a reporter for the New York Times, and she's in jail for refusing to give information. She wrote a book several years ago entitled One by One by One, and she wrote that the Wiesenthal Center has given new meaning to what was once a macabre in-house joke. There's no business like Shoah business. And Shoah is, of course, the Hebrew word for the Holocaust. Even the head of the Yad Vashem Holocaust Center in Israel said some years ago, quote, the Jewish people does many vulgar things, but the Wiesenthal Center has raised it to a complete level, the optimum use of sensitive issues in order to raise money, unquote. Its reputation, even among other Jewish groups, is not a good one. But what's really a crime, and particularly bad, is that all the rest of us are shaken down to support their agenda.
How rich is the center?
Well, as I said, it has an annual budget, according to its last public filing, of $27 million. And it has this enormous museum, which received taxpayer money also in in Los Angeles. Rabbi Heyer receives a very generous salary. He's put over the years a number of his close relatives on the payroll as well. But it's a kind of an incestuous thing. On the board of directors of the Wiesenthal Center is a man who owns a company that has the contract to carry out the security at the place. Also on the board are leading Hollywood people, one of whom, I think it was the Weinstein brothers, made a made-for-television movie about a Wiesenthal Center undercover operation in which, just incidentally, I was mentioned in a grotesque way, I mean, ridiculous way, really. But there's a whole lot of incestuous cross-fertilization, you might say, with the Wiesenthal Center, financial figures in California, people in Hollywood, and people in political life as well.
Well, it's not only a Jewish organization, but it's a club of many of the wealthiest and most influential Jews. It appears that the asset value and the budget of the center itself is very large, and yet they qualify for millions upon millions upon millions of taxpayer dollars from the people of the United States and the people of the state of California. It's really an outrage.
It's an outrage, and as I say, it deserves the scorn and contempt of every decent person. And our purpose in holding this demonstration at the Wiesenthal Center is to focus attention on the clear record of recklessness, of deceit and lies by the Wiesenthal Center, and to protest above all the taking of millions and millions of dollars in taxpayers' funds to support this. One of the particularly harmful roles of the Wiesenthal Center has been its propaganda for war. The Wiesenthal Center, like other Jewish organizations, were urging Americans to spend their money and give the lives of their young people for war against Iraq for many years before the invasion in March 2003. Already back in 1990, in an article in Newsweek magazine, Rabbi Heyer was calling on the United States to invade Iraq and overthrow the regime there.
Really?
He claimed that we had to do it because within 3 years, Iraq was going to have nuclear weapons. Already back in 1991, the Wiesenthal Center, in a big front-page article in its magazine, was claiming that Iraq was killing Iranian prisoners of war in special gas chambers built by a German company, and using Zyklon B gas, the same gas the Wiesenthal Center claimed that the Germans used to kill millions of Jews in Europe during World War II. And these claims are all just fantastic lies.
Yeah, that's a real whopper.
Yeah, a real whopper. But the Wiesenthal Center gets away with this because nobody calls them to account in the way that they should be called to account if they were any other kind of organization. In the months leading up to the invasion of Iraq in March 2003, the Wiesenthal Center was putting out more falsehoods to justify an American invasion of the country, claiming that Saddam Hussein was a grave threat to the world. And this, again, this was just in keeping with the campaign by other Jewish groups as well. That we now know is untrue, and that, of course, the Bush administration was also thumping away at.
Well, those who pose as apostles of tolerance and love often turn out to be the precise opposite.
Well, the Wiesenthal Center's record and has just not undergone anything like the scrutiny it would receive, even if it was a government agency. You know, and the center is named after, of course, Simon Wiesenthal, and he's treated as a kind of living saint, too, by the media, which has been just amazingly indulgent of both the center and of the man after whom the center is named. But Simon Wiesenthal has a record himself, just reckless disregard for truth over the years. But the media just doesn't seem to care what the real facts are. And the facts, again, about the Wiesenthal Center and about Simon Wiesenthal are very easy to check for anyone who does a little digging on his own.
I understand that one of the planks of the Wiesenthal Center's agenda is censorship of the Internet. They have taken some pretty strong positions on that, have they not?
Right. They distribute a CD and have been urging and successfully urging all sorts of corporations and schools and agencies to install filters that block out websites and that, like National Vanguard and like the IHR, that say things that they don't like. And the Wiesenthal Center has been calling for censorship not only in that regard, but in other ways. Some years ago, they were successful in demanding that Daniel Barenboim, the Jewish conductor, not perform any music by Wagner at a concert in Israel, and that was successfully done. And anyway, this is an organization that's always going on about tolerance. In fact, the museum that they run is called the Museum of Tolerance, but it's a very one-sided, one-way version of tolerance. I mean, the most obvious thing is that the Wiesenthal Center has an agenda for America of tolerance of everybody and everything while supporting a country, Israel, that is so distinctly intolerant that as part of its basic core and makeup, an institutional structure discriminates against non-Jews. It's a Jewish state, and Jews make no bones about the fact that it's a state to uphold Jewish interests, Jewish peoplehood, Jewish agenda. But efforts by any other country to support the cultural or racial or religious character and heritage of that society are denounced by the Simon Wiesenthal Center as intolerant. And this is just such a blatant double standard. I mean, one of the most obvious is that the Wiesenthal Center is loudly critical of any terrorism against Jews in Israel. But the Wiesenthal Center has publicly and very enthusiastically welcomed to its offices two Israeli leaders, Yitzhak Shamir and Menachem Begin, each of whom have well-documented records as terrorists when Israel was still being formed, carrying out assassinations and bombings against British and Arab targets back in those days before Israel was finally formed as a state in 1948.
Well, by pointing that out, you've probably put any site that carries this interview text on the block list, according to Rabbi Abraham Cooper.
Well, we've seen a sharp upturn in the last week in hate mail that we've been receiving, but that's good because it shows that we're stepping on some toes that should be stepped on.
Now, Cooper is essentially the censorship point man at the center, is he not?
Well, he's the so-called associate dean of the center, and he and Heyer are both very important, play a big role, but Cooper speaks more to the public usually than Heyer does. Part of the reason is Heyer makes such an unattractive appearance, I think.
Yes, you know, people have accused us of altering the photographs we carry on nationalvanguard.org of Rabbi Heyer, but we do not alter them at all. He actually looks like that.
Oh, he's a particularly repulsive-looking character. But talking of altering photographs, the Wiesenthal Center was caught a couple of years ago putting on its website a photograph taken at Auschwitz in 1944. And because it wasn't lurid enough, the Wiesenthal Center added some smoke supposedly pouring out of a crematory chimney in the background. And some sharp-eyed friends of the IHR and pointed this out, and we ran an article showing the added smoke to this photograph on the Wiesenthal Center site. David Irving also pointed this out on his website. And after a time, the Wiesenthal Center finally took down the photograph after it was being pointed out by quite a few people. But that's a pretty explicit example of doctoring of photographs by the Wiesenthal Center, but not a unique one.
Well, Mark, I wish you well in your protest efforts and to bring a greater public awareness of the nefarious agenda of the Simon Wiesenthal Center and Jewish supremacism in general to the American public and to the world public on the Internet. You've been busy with some other activism this summer. I just saw in a Jewish newspaper, no less, a report that you just spoke in New York City. Can you tell us what took you to New York and what happened there?
Yes, last Saturday I was in New York City for a visit, and I spoke at an IHR meeting. It's the first IHR meeting we've had in Manhattan. The person on the ground who was organizing things was Michael Santomaro, who runs the Reporter's Notebook website. And last October, Michael was the target of the Jewish Defense Organization, another a militant Zionist group headed by a criminal, Mordecai Levy. But the meeting went very well. The audience was very enthusiastic. Luckily, we didn't have any trouble with Mordecai Levy or anyone else at the time. And the Forward, a very influential Jewish weekly published in New York City, even sent a reporter to the meeting. Part of the purpose is of the, not just this meeting, but a lot of what I've been doing in the last several months, is to try to focus attention on the dangers for everyone, regardless of what principles and what causes are dearest to each of our hearts, about the danger to all of us of this Jewish Zionist grip on our political life, our cultural life, and so forth. And I think it's the world is waking up, I think, to the harm that this Jewish Zionist monster has on our life. And if for no other reason than that everyone is alarmed at the dangers of a war with Iran, which would have terrible consequences. But the same people who have been pushing for war successfully against Iraq, but also against Syria and other countries, are now agitating for a new war against Iran. The consequences of that would be terrible for the world. And regardless of what principles or what causes we feel most strongly about, it's in the interests of all of humanity to work together to oppose this monster, this Jewish Zionist power that has been able to make war, cause so much destruction and death, and which so corrupts, especially in America, our political system and our cultural life.
How was your message received, Mark?
It was very well received. There was a standing ovation at the end. And I stressed very strongly in my talk the important fact that Jews see themselves as a separate people with a separate agenda. This isn't something new. It's been true throughout history. In fact, if Jews in general didn't have such a fervent sense of separateness, of chosenness, long ago the Jewish people would have vanished from the stage of history. But the danger, of course, is that a group with a very strong sense of its own peoplehood and is able to push successfully for an agenda that's different than those of the interests of other people is bound to create great problems. And this was seen more than 100 years ago by Theodor Herzl when he wrote The Jewish State, and that's why he thought the only solution was the founding of a country in which Jews would be normal. Well, that hasn't happened. I don't think it ever really will happen. But I emphasize strongly that we're seeing the playing out now on a world stage, a drama that has played itself out time and again in many different places and in different cultures over many different centuries. But in the past, this great drama has been played out on a regional or a local or a national, sometimes a continental-wide stage, but now it's happening on a worldwide stage. And because it's a worldwide problem, it must be dealt with by the world as a whole. And that's why it's so crucially important that we have the maximum amount of unity and cooperation among people of goodwill all around the world against this power.
Well, I hope we can do that, Mark. It's interesting that the Jews have this strong sense of separateness, of otherness, and yet they are the one people who are literally everywhere in the world.
Yes, I quoted from an article by a Jewish leader, community leader, who was titled, "We're Right, the Whole World is Wrong," in which he was emphasizing that not only the separateness of Jews, but that Jews have always been right and the rest of humanity has been wrong. And that's, you'll see this also in the propaganda of the Wiesenthal Center. There's this immense distrust of non-Jewish humanity. But to give to any group tremendous power is a bad thing. A minority group is a bad thing. But especially a group that views the rest of us with such distrust and such hostility, that's a disastrous situation. But yes, we just have to come to grips with this. And luckily, there seems to be all over the world, if not yet very strongly in our country, but at least in many other countries, a really growing, widespread awareness of this reality.
You spoke of the potential for war with Iran, and I saw that last week you were interviewed by Mehr News, the Iranian news agency, talking about something called the Greater Middle East Initiative, GMEI. Can you tell us about that?
Well, I was asked to answer some questions about this initiative by the Bush administration. It's been called the Greater Middle East Initiative to bring democracy to that region of the world. It's Bush has pushed it and his administration has been pushing it for some time now. But really, it's not only hypocritical, it's doomed to failure. It's based on false premises. The interview appeared in English in the Tehran Times, the leading English language newspaper in Tehran, but it also appeared in Farsi, that is Iranian, in that country as well. But this is an echo of Woodrow Wilson's pledge to go to war against the Central Powers during the First World War to make the world safe for democracy. It's just unbelievable arrogance to think that any country is going to impose its cultural, political standards on other countries. There's no sane reason why the differences in political system should be inevitably a cause for war between countries, unless, of course, the political system is aimed at aggressively against other countries. But the one country in the world that has troops all over the globe is the United States. And one of the great dangers that we are seeing is the growth of a kind of bipolar world in which the United States and Israel are on one side and the whole rest of the world on the other. This is another point I made in my talk.
That's very good for awareness of Jewish power, but it's very bad for the people of the United States.
Well, we Americans are both complicit and victims at the same time. We're complicit because we permit and have permitted our government to exercise power on behalf of alien interests. That's a very bad thing. Most Americans don't seem to understand what that means, the implications of that. But at the same time, we're also victims because our own cultural heritage, our own values, our own way of life has also been assaulted and harmed in all of this, and our interests are being hurt. I can't stress enough the damage already that's taken place to our standing in the world, but we're going to pay even a higher price in the years ahead, I'm afraid. Right now, nearly 1,800 Americans have lost their lives in the Iraq War, which I think is incontrovertibly a war primarily for interests of Israel and Jewry, and we're going to be paying a higher price in the years ahead. And this is on top of the billions and billions of dollars we paid to the State of Israel and to the, $200 billion or so that the Iraq War has already cost us.
And that will be far overshadowed by the cost of any war with Iran.
A war with Iran would not only be more costly, it would be even more obviously a war for Jewish and Zionist interests and one against the interests of the world. Iran has good relations with every country in the world now except the United States and Israel. The president of Iran, or the previous president of Iran, has made state visits to England, France, Germany, Italy. They've repaired their relations with some of the countries, some of the Arab countries with whom it did not have good relations in the past. And there is just no support whatsoever in the world for a war against Iran because they build a nuclear reactor. It's mad. But Iran has said that they're going to go ahead and build a nuclear reactor, which, by the way, many countries around the world have. And Israel has announced that if and when Iran builds a nuclear reactor, it will attack Iran to destroy it. And the danger is not merely that a regional war might develop between Iran and Israel, but that the United States would be drawn into such a conflict. And that's a very dangerous thing. Wars often in history start one way and then they end up very differently than anyone had planned or foreseen.
I think Iraq has ended up quite differently than what the neocon warmongers wanted it to themselves.
That's right. As I mentioned in the talk, the same people that pushed for the war against Iraq, the Douglas Feith, Richard Perle, Paul Wolfowitz, Norman Podhoretz, have been pushing for the violent overthrow of regimes throughout the Middle East. They want to destroy every regime which is an actual or potential adversary of Israel. And that's just a madness, really. I mean, the world already has paid a high price, and it's going to pay, I'm afraid, an even higher price for having permitted this rogue state of Israel to get the power it has. If the United States treated Israel by the same standards that we've treated Iraq, we'd be bombing Tel Aviv, and we'd be putting Ariel Sharon behind bars as a war criminal.
Indeed. Well, I salute you for your efforts to prevent this tragedy. It's often said that those who do not understand history are condemned to repeat it, but it seems like the only people doing something serious to prevent that cycle from repeating endlessly again and again are the Institute for Historical Review and their allies around the world. And Mark, I want to thank you for all you're doing for what is right, for what is good, for what is true, and to prevent some of these horrible tragedies from occurring. I wish you well in your efforts, and I thank you for your scholarship, your speaking, your activism, and for being a guest on American Dissident Voices.
Well, thank you again, Kevin. Of course, I admire your work as well, and appreciate once again the opportunity to be your guest.
American Dissident Voices. This coming September 11th, the birthday of National Vanguard founder William Pierce, will mark our largest ever organized literature distribution. National Vanguard Western States Coordinator Roger Williams has created two important new flyers focusing on homeland security and border control for this effort, and I'd like every American Dissident Voices listener to take part. To see the flyers and get a copy for duplication, just visit nationalvanguard.org/911. That's nationalvanguard, all one word, .org/911. Or write to National Vanguard, Box 5145, Charlottesville, Virginia, 22905.